Jason?
Here.
Present.
Commissioner Dale?
Here.
And President Coleman?
Present. Would you care to join me in the Pledge of Allegiance?
Yeah, start us off good.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right. Thank you. Do we have a report on closed session?
Yes. No reportable action was taken during closed session.
All right. Thank you. We'll move on to public comment. This portion of the agenda allows the public to speak to the board on various issues not itemized on this agenda. A member of the public may also request that a matter appearing on the consent calendar be pulled and discussed separately. Pursuant to the Brown Act, the board may not take any action on any item that does not appear on the agenda. Each speaker is limited to speak for a period of 3 minutes regarding each item on the agenda when that time comes up. Each speaker is limited to speak for a period of 3 minutes during the public comment portion of the agenda regarding items of special interest to the public not appearing on the agenda. Would anyone care to make public comment tonight? All right, seeing none, let's move on to the consent calendar. The number of items on the consent calendar, and anyone care to make a motion?
Move to approve.
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second on the consent calendar. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed or abstaining? Hearing none, consent calendar passes. Moving on to communications, reports, and correspondence received.
Currently no correspondence received.
Are you ready for me? Sorry, I'm helping Gary a bit.
I said Mike, and I don't know why I said Mike. Chris.
No problem. Okay, Executive Director's Report. So I want to take a moment and talk about our grants. I've gotten several calls and questions about state and federal grants and a little bit of the landscape that's out there. I'm very happy to report that all of our grants are active. For those that are still in contracting, I mean, we haven't executed the grant agreement. The discussions with agencies are recurring. They're positive. They're happening. And the dialogue is very great. So we feel very good about our grants right now, and we could update later on, but for the most part, to address any concerns that have been shared, as of today, all of our executed grants continue to move forward as they should. Those that are not yet executed, we're having the proper kind of communication with the agencies and moving through the process. So, agency community leadership meetings, there are several each and every month. This month, there's been engagement with RCEA, RCAA, the County of Humboldt, the City of Eureka, some of the private groups. Those are more periodic phone calls in regard to projects. A lot is going on right now in the educational world. I'll provide a little bit of an update in just a moment. And then many leadership meetings, meeting with some of the other executive directors around the community, as well as the Eureka Chamber of Commerce. And so I'm happy that there's a lot of collaboration occurring in our community. EOPA elected officials Protecting America visited Eureka this past weekend. There were folks that were invited in advance that attended. I think we had a very good turnout on Friday and Saturday. Saturday, we met here in the water, or excuse me, here at the marina, went out on the water. ZNC Marine was able to provide us a vessel. Had a good tour, and we looked at our heavy lift marine terminal project and just talked generally about some of the growth that's happening here in our port, some of the upcoming opportunity. We were happy to have them come. We met with Alex DeHu, I believe is how you pronounce his name. If I have that wrong, Alex, my apologies. And Ben Collingsworth. So appreciate everybody that participated in that. I've reported previously about participating in the College of the Redwoods President's Advisory Council. I had an excellent meeting at Startup Humboldt last Friday. Happy that President Flamer shared that they have received full accreditation. That means they'll have 7 years with absolutely no restrictions. That's outstanding for our college. As we know, through times past, there were quite a bit of challenges. He and his team's leadership, the faculty there, have done a remarkable job, and they're standing far above in many cases. So it was exciting to hear. Obviously, we work very closely with both CR and Cal Poly Humboldt. Started at Humboldt, I shared with you a little bit. This is the old InterNews building, or for those of you true local, the old PC Saki's service department. But this is the space that was recently created by a number of groups. Our local SBDC is housed there. But more to come on that. They have a big grand opening on April 24th. It is by invitation. We are not in charge of the invitations, but I know I'm sure quite a few of you will be a part of it. And there's opportunities to stop in there anytime and get a tour. I like their motto, we're a space where ideas take root. And this is truly a place where you can get business mentorship, have a place to perhaps begin your business with all of the necessary facilities and get the guidance and financial support that you might need. Their community education programs and professional development courses were shared. They've expanded this quite greatly. I thought this was really important to note because as many of us as working professionals, sometimes we need a little bit of reminder about the basics. I know I do. And there's a lot of great programs out there. So we're actually looking at a couple of things we can do here with our team. They're very low cost. They can tailor them to your needs. Also great opportunity for those people that are looking to advance in rank. And hung a flyer up here. And sure enough, one of our workers knocks on the door and say, hey, what's this? So just want to give a shout out to them. Excited about the programs that are happening and report to you on the good things that are happening with the college. So the Army Corps of Engineers 2025 dredge schedule, it's still on. There was a little bit of concern, but the things are progressing. So again, just as a reminder, the dredge Aquino is due on April 21st. That does channel dredging. That's the smaller of the two core dredges that'll be doing, but the main channel or the SMO and Eureka channels should be here for about 10 to 14 days of federal channel work. Then the SEONS is due, also an Army Corps dredge, in May for 8 to 9 days of barn interest dredge work. And this is the dredge that will be utilized to do near shore placement. There's a lot of communication going on right now because in that area, there is fishing gear still out because we're in crab season. We're communicating with the president of the Humboldt Fishermen's Marketing Association. There's a notice to mariners that's been produced. And then we've been talking with the dredge master directly so we can get some mapping as we know more and as time gets closer, more of that will be shared. And then finally, as I believe you all know, Manson, again, has been awarded the West Coast Dredge Hopper contract. The Bayport is due in the barn entrance this summer, and that's for a total of about 900,000 cubic yards. So we will have a full round of dredging again this year. As you've heard us say many times, we're most grateful for the relationship that's been fostered with the Army Corps of Engineers. But very, very good news for traffic in and out of the bay, as well as our shipping. We have a cruise ship inbound. It's on course for April 27th. It's the Europa 2. This is the vessel that's coming in. Has 370 crew, 516 guests, where it's capable of hauling that. This is a true luxury ship. It's a real pleasure to have them coming in. So we want to recognize our partnership with the City of Eureka on cruise ships, as well as the support we received from Zerling and Zerling. So we'll be welcoming them at 0700 hours on April 27th. Hope that's a Sunday. I wrote Sunday. And I have a special guest here tonight, Carol Vandermeer. Carol is going to present a little bit on the Peninsula Community Collaborative. And I just want to give a shout out. I met Carol back in 2019, I was reacquainted with her when we were having a lot of illicit activities and dumpings all up and down the peninsula. A young lady by name of Natalie Arroyo, for those of you probably never met her, but if you haven't, I suggest you do, reintroduced me to Carol, started participating in the Community Collaborative. I want to offer a personal testimony about the quality of the work that's done in this group, the awareness for the community, and that they genuinely work from one tip of the peninsula to the other. If you are a volunteer, if you want to get out there, I would highly encourage you to attend one of the community days, whether it's mural day, native planting, but good stuff. Because we're having a mouse problem, I'm going to advance your slide if it's okay.
That's great.
Thanks, no Carol.
All right. Thanks. I just thought Chris invited me to give you like a quick overview about the Peninsula Community Collaborative. We encompass the communities of Fairhaven, Samoa, and Manila, and we're really focused about just enhancing the safety, health, and well-being of the residents out on the peninsula. And as you all know, what's happening on the peninsula? So it's really valuable to have us here. So the The municipal beautification project that we've been partnering with the Harbor District on really helped us update and install all kinds of improvements, from murals to having cleanup days. I just wanted to let you know that there is a, if you just Google Peninsula Beautification Story Map, you can take a little cruise and zoom in and see where we put in, you know, dog pots and signage and murals and all kinds of things. So I really encourage you to check that out. I don't want to take up too much of your time, or I can get a full tour. All right. So we part of what we're doing and continue to do is a campaign to keep the peninsula beautiful. I feel really fortunate to have lived on the peninsula for the last 30 years, and it's a really a special place. And so through our campaign, we've had invasive species removal days. Chris has been out there in the sun. We've, you know, worked at improving things with native plantings. Dumpster days. We have one planned, Peninsula Cleanup Day coming up on May 3rd. And so this is the kind of thing we want to continue, even though we're mostly all through with the Peninsula Beautification Grant. Through the support of Special Services District, the number of folks we can try to keep things going. So, go ahead. Here's some examples of some improvement on a PowerPole site. We are able to update the Samoa Peninsula Beach access, put in a bike rack, put in dog bags and garbage cans. Because this is, as you know, is a really popular site. And things are looking pretty good. It's just happening for the day. So we have and continue to have lots of ways to engage the community around trash cleanups, dumpster day, celebration. I don't know if any of you've been out to Fairhaven, but one of the places that we were able to put a mural on the Fairhaven Fire Department and repaint that, and worked a lot with Leroy Zerlang out in Fairhaven, of course, and got a lot done. We've had some kind of creative ways of engaging the community. We had sponsors for a trash and treasure cleanup where you can actually buy treasure, sort of incentives for people to get out there. These are just two examples. As I said, we, you know, get people out there cleaning up in Fairhaven. One of the things we started was Adopt a Road out in Fairhaven, and Fox Farm is doing that and collaborating with staff here at the Harbor District to pick up the trash, clean up the trash. And so these are some of the things that are kind of where we started with the Peninsula Beautification Grant, but we're trying to keep going. So here's just some more shots of some of the things we've done. One of our big cleanups down at PowerPole site. Here's one of the kids. I told you we had a trash and treasure, and he found these. A local artist had blown some glass balls, and I think actually RDV was one of the sponsors of that to try to make it kind of fun for folks. We do have meetings and talk about all kinds of things on the peninsula. Here's a little tour over at Camden Court down in Samoa. One of the residents has got some ideas and great ideas about how to improve some really interesting historic buildings there. So we're touring there. Yes, there's the fire rescue. Leroy's been a really helpful part of it all. Here we had, quote, a ribbon cutting ceremony with the mural on the back of the fire hall. And so it's just is a really great way to build community. Most recently, we had Troy Nicolini give a presentation about tsunami preparedness out at the Manila Community Center. I got my Rotary Club involved, and we actually gave away three starter go bag kits and supplies, and we had about 30 people come. Some folks were actually had transportation provided to come from the apartments there in Samoa. So it was really successful, and Troy gave a really big talk. So this is one example. We try to do things on safety, like tsunami preparedness. We do trash a litter abatement. Vivian gave a talk about, you know, our water systems and some of the things that are being upgraded there. Of course, we've gotten updates for the wind development offshore and port development, because all of these things are things that the community is very keenly interested in. And one of the things about it is just helping people engage in those things that affect their lives. And most recently, and coming up, oh yeah, there's some fun things. Here's another example of the trash cleanups. And there's one of the big vaults that was all tagged, and now it has a beautiful mural on it in the background. So these are some fun results and some of the positive things that have been going on. But I was about to say, one of the other issues coming up is you may be aware that Caltrans is doing an update of their 255 corridor plan. And so we have a little subcommittee of the Peninsula Collaborative called Manila Moves. We've been meeting about coming together to comment on that plan that will impact our community. And that's probably one of the top concerns with all the development that's, you know, proposed and going to be happening, is how do we make sure that transportation is safe for all modes, you know, not just vehicles, but pedestrians, cyclists, and so on. Next one. So, like I said, this is just a quickie little update. We're continuing our efforts to keep the peninsula beautiful in so many ways. It's a really special place. I was just out in Dunes recently with our endangered wallflower out there for me. I feel really fortunate to be out there and appreciate the support that the Harbor District has given to keep this really important community group going. I think it's one way that, one of many ways, but one way we can make sure that community voices are heard and supported as things change.
All right. Thank you, Carol.
Okay. Thank you.
Appreciate you coming tonight. So as we migrate later in the meeting, we'll be talking a little bit on budgets, but one of the things we have in our budget is a recurring value to support PCC. Without them, we would not have been able to conquer the peninsula in the fashion that we had. In 2019, when I began at the district, we had camps and trash everywhere. We were able to work with people that were in camps with absolute dignity and provide resource and provide opportunities. We're able to abate literally just about everything. We've removed vehicles, cars. The $900,000 we received from Caltrans was really remarkable. And there's a great sense of pride out there. So we're really happy that we're going to continue to do that. So we'll be budgeting this year again to support PCC and continue the great efforts out on the peninsula. So thank you, Carol.
Thank you.
Thank you. Chris, will you take questions on your executive report?
You can.
Yeah, can you go back to your agenda slide?
What, for
just,
me?
Yeah, that just had the...
Absolutely.
Yeah, EOPA, that's for my question. Elected officials protecting America. Mm-hmm. Can you just tell us a little bit more about what their mission is?
Sure.
We extended a welcome to them and showed them around. What are they going to do with that information?
Absolutely. So I think it's a relationship under development.
Mm-hmm.
EOPA appears to be a group of very concerned, informed, and well-meaning folks that want to support projects. They have mm-hmm. things of special interest. They want to protect water. They want to protect resources. They're very interested in climate change. So I think at this point in time, they've taken a number of stances that are very positive in those areas, and this was kind of a first step at introduction. So right now, we're getting to learn a little bit more about one another. These are people that are... mainly a large group of people that are veterans that have been in office. It originated on the East Coast. We met specifically with two, and they're very excited. One of the opportunities they do is they help provide training opportunities in more than one area, as well as help provide advocacy, help people to learn better ways to do community engagement, better ways to organize, bring awareness to causes that are important to them. So it's possible that we'll have them share a little bit more in the future. We're kind of working that out a little bit.
Okay. Thank you.
Absolutely. Not a lot for the development director today. You probably noticed he's gone. He's on a family vacation. But I do want to recognize his attendance and presentation at Offshore Wind Transmission West back in March, not too many days ago. Rob was on a panel. There was some changes in the panel, and he was at the last minute told, you're the presenter and you're flying solo. And word on the street is he did a pretty good job. So I did want to recognize his efforts on that. Rob will be back next week. Mindy's also gone. She's at Cruise, the big cruising conference representing Cruise of the West and, of course, Port Humble Bay. So wanted to make sure we give Rob's port tonight. And I don't know, Brian, do you have a report? I don't think so. We're moving on to the district engineer. I have to advance the slides tonight. Sorry, Mike.
a few things that have been occurring.
I'll go ahead and load those for you.
With the islands, this is on. Oh, there you go. So we have just an ongoing monthly meeting with Army Corps engineers with the dredge management meeting. Field Landing Boat Guard, we've been working again with the monthly SWIFT inspections. We just actually just submitted our revised SWIFT for Amendment 5. And with that, now that that's been finalized, we're going to conduct a training with staff on site and come up with a schedule to work with them. Shelter Cove boat launch, we're still trying to secure funding for some of the work that was the storm damage that happened through FEMA. So we continue to coordinate with FEMA, hoping to get some funds for that. RMT1 Brownfield, I'll talk about that since a little later on in the agenda, but we participated with district staff conducting reviews. Chris will talk about that later on in the agenda. That's for the Brownfield site investigation. RMT2 Ocean Outfall, we're now reaching out to agencies. We've been working with the Coastal Commission, but now we're working with the other community agencies and working with them to see what other requirements that they're going to have as we work on the repair to the ocean outfall and the beach nourishment program. And then with the solid waste disposal site, just ongoing monitoring that was conducted. We did our semi-annual monitoring out there. And then we also, part of that, every 5 years, we submitted that to the regional board for our groundwater monitoring report. There's really no change with that. I mean, things are pretty stable and we're in compliance. And then with Nordic, we participated in a meeting with the regional board looking at the monitoring plan for the ocean outfall. So that was approved. So that's really good news. So that moves forward. And then we are working with assessing the elevated water tank that's part of the infrastructure that's out there. And it really hasn't been maintained really. Since the pulp mill has been out of operation. So we just conducted a drone flight to take a look at that. We're working with district staff to secure the, try and locate the plans on the water tank. We've been reaching out to get some quotes for a tank inspection to occur. And that'll be helpful because then we can index that potential cost to repair, maybe look at maybe other alternatives. We're looking into the elevated tank condition. And then we're also coordinating hopefully next week with Nordic staff and the engineer and then with the planner to kind of outline what are the things that we need to work on and develop a plan for infrastructure for the intake system. And here is just some, you can see condition of the tank. Again, in a marine environment can be pretty harsh. So you can just see the drone footage is something that just kind of gets some eyes on what's going on with that as we try to coordinate and get some quotes for our tank inspection. You can see a lot of the, let's say the appurtenances, you can see it have been showing a lot of rust. You can see the rust staining, that's the discoloration that you're seeing. So definitely something of issue that we have to address, either maintain it or remove it. So just thought I'd show a couple of pictures from what we got from our drone.
Thank you, Mike.
Question?
Sure, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, while you're still at the mic, Mike, ask a question. Redwood Marine Terminal 2 outfall, you mentioned about trying to get beach replenishment, and we know that the littoral cell is kind of sediment sand starved. Executive Director Mickelson talked about the next, some of the next dredge spoils going to the near shore cell. How much of that do you expect to hit to the beach, or the other question is, will any of that help protect that outfall, further protect it?
It's anticipated that it'll help. Again, with Moffitt Nickel on the modeling, I'm not a coastal engineer.
Yeah, sure.
So the concept was, as we all talked about, that being starved ever since the breakwater, the jetty went in. So putting stuff in the near shore in that system, and eventually we get permitted to place onshore, then you'll see more cycling of that sand depending on summer weather conditions. So part of the task, again, look at our permitting, but then that one of the requirements will be some modeling on anticipation of what that system looks like. But it will really help with the nearshore placement, and then we'll get real data already. We'll get some sand in the system.
Thank you.
So actually looking forward to that.
Great. Thank you.
Anything else?
Thank you.
Thank you.
I don't have anything to report. Thanks.
Got it. Okay, I guess moving on to commissioner reports. Only something for me. All right, Craig.
Just a quick comment. I attended the Samoa Peninsula, you know, group, you know, relative to the heavy lift marine terminal, you know, last week, and it's always good to meet with the community around that. But this time, our development director Rob took us down with Adam, you know, down to the marine terminal, and we really got to walk through it. And you know, it's not the prettiest place. It's an industrial brownfield, and there's some use of it, but I thought that was really valuable to walk the community through what the project would look like from that point of view of the ground, and especially walking through, you know, I may not put this in the best terms, but sort of, you know, almost an apocalyptic, you know, wasteland where you're waiting for the zombies to come out. I mean, just gave.
We call it post-industrial.
Post-industrial. I knew there's a better word for it. but you know, it gave some perspective as to how redevelopment of that area, you know, it made more clear some of the community benefits to it, and also made more clear some of the impacts, but both. I appreciated that we really saw both on that tour. And I just want to give a shout out to Amy Jester at Core Hub, just that we're thinking of her. I know she's online listening, so we're thinking about you and wish you the best through health issues. That's all I have to say.
Thank you. A couple little updates about local commercial fishing and actually recreational fishing. I see we've renewed these charter boats agreements with the district tonight in our consent calendar. And one of the primary parts of their business is the salmon season. And once again, for a third year in a row, there's not going to be a salmon season recreationally or commercially in Humboldt County and state of California, for that matter. The options that were put out for possible salmon seasons for commercial boats were 10 fish per week for possibly 2 weeks of the year. And you may have to travel further than the 10 fish would be worth to go to the area that was going to be open. So not great news there. The only good news about salmon is the disaster declaration for the 2023 season finally came through, and both recreational charter folks and commercial folks are supposedly going to be getting some sort of disaster relief by mid-June. Although there hasn't been a disaster declaration for 2024 yet, even though there was no season. For Dungeness crab, it's winding down now. And at the same time, due to possibilities of whale entanglements, the season's being closed off the northern part of the California coast outside of 180 feet. Most folks were fishing outside of 180 feet, so the season is basically going to end early. And in some sections of the state, the season is actually going to be closed early because of the possibility of whale entanglements. That's about it for the fishing stuff. I did participate with the Packout Green Team for one of their trash bashes a couple of weeks ago on a Saturday. And just west of Eureka High in the Gulch, where they've done a lot of work recently to do some stream remediation for fish passage and whatnot. A group of us in 1 hour filled a 40-yard dumpster, and I'm guessing we got about a third of what was there. It's pretty amazing to know the kind of stuff that exists in the gulches of Eureka. So anyway, that's my report.
Right. Outside of our subcommittee meeting, I don't have much to report, but I will apologize for my early dismissal last month. Never happened to me before. I'll find them.
Glad you're feeling better now.
And thank you for carrying on the meeting. Get to the event.
Yeah, thank you for participating in a cleanup. It's always bad. It's a good thing to do, though. It's a good I try and do them. I've tried to always encourage my daughter to do them, good, and it's, yeah, there's a lot to be cleaned up. Various subcommittees. We had a fishing subcommittee and infrastructure subcommittee. I did get to participate with the Elected Officials to Protect America. When I saw that acronym, I had no idea. That was such a generic acronym that could mean so many different things. But it was an interesting group, and it seems like, yeah, they have a lot to offer and good stories from, as Chris said, is founded by veterans who had realized the impact of climate change to global instability and how, that needed to be addressed from that perspective. So that was good to participate in that. And then I wanted to mention, yesterday, went to one of my favorite film festivals, the Banff Film Festival, and it's an international film festival on like mountain and outdoor things. And they had a movie last night on the Klamath Dam removals that was funded by Patagonia and made by Shane Anderson. Is a shorter film that's going to be a feature length film sometime. And the reason I'm bringing it up is because, a lot of people in the film were people that we meet with regularly regarding our project. And it, even though I'm, having been around here a while, I'm familiar with the stories of what went on in the fish wars and the long battle and how many people put so much effort into that. It was a well-done film, and it really sank home of just like the impact that was felt because of that development that had been put in without a lot of forethought, and really like drove home to me like how, with newer development, like, that we're contemplating with the heavy lift marine terminal, how much better we need to do than stuff that had been done in the past. And, and I am really proud of the efforts that we're making to do so much better, and we can continue to do that. But it really, like, as I was watching that, really struck me just the impact that had on so many generations. So with that,
can I make one more comment?
Please do.
Thank you. I forgot one of the items. I wanted just to welcome to Chambers some of my students from Cal Poly Humboldt who are here. They're in my environmental science class that is environmental conflict resolution. And we just did a field trip on Saturday that's called 6 miles, 6 conflicts along this peninsula. And, I only discussed 6 conflicts along the peninsula, and they realized that there's, at least a dozen or more, and you can't really throw a stick in any direction and not run into some kind of project that's being proposed and opposed, or there's some kind of history of conflict in the place. And so it really hit home for them. And I had to bribe them with extra credit to come to a public meeting and write about it. And so they know that offshore wind is on the docket tonight, and they know that there's opposition and proponents and opponents to that. So they're here for a good show. They may be disappointed that we're not at each other's throats about this at this moment, but at least we'll be learning something. Anyway,
thanks. I can try and bang my gavel more now that I know that there's students in the audience that are going to be entertaining. But move on to unfinished business. I received status update regarding the Humboldt Bay Offshore Wind Heavy Lift Marine Terminal Project.
I'm going to get us going and then hand it over to the speakers.
Which one? You can use the keyboard. Just use the down
arrow. Oh, does it go right into their presentations?
Yep.
Okay. Then I will just say as a reminder, last month there, so you guys have been hearing from technical speakers about the Marine Terminal Project for the past few months. Last month, the theme was amenities, and we heard from some of the consultant team about trail planning around Samoa, the project and the project site, the Woodley Island Fisherman's Wharf design concepts, and other community benefits. This month, the theme is marine project elements, and we have a few speakers from the Moffitt Nickel team to get into that. And I think there was a change in the order, so I'm going to pass it over to Adam.
Yeah, sure. If I could just look quickly. Adam Waxhall with Moffitt and Nickel. I'm one of the project managers on the Heavy Lift Terminal Project, and we have 3 speakers tonight. We have a change in order. Eunice is going to present first. He's going to present on elements of the hydrodynamic modeling he's doing around the project, particularly focused on tsunami modeling. And this is, he's going to present the modeling, the inundation maps that he's producing. And just for context, the reason we're doing all that is to inform the design of the site so it's less susceptible to tsunami, right? Not just to look at how susceptible it is now. And also, of course, it's important to the CEQA and NEPA and permitting process. And then Xuying is going to present on the wet storage component of the project, which is where fully assembled turbines will be stored, as well as just the foundations. And Miriam's going to present on some structural engineering topics around design for the wharfs. And as noted, we're going to change the order. And Vanessa, I think Eunice is going to go first, and he's just going to share his screen because he has some animation stuff. And then we'll jump over to the others. If that works for you guys.
Can you minimize this?
Hit escape. Presentation. There you go.
Is
that yeah, he can share his screen.
Yeah, go ahead, James.
All right. Good afternoon, commissioners. Adam, can you guys hear me okay?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, great. All right, let me just put this in action.
And we're seeing your presenter mode there. I don't know if that's with your notes.
Yeah, I'm trying to hide this. So I can switch it. Let me see.
If you go up to display settings, you can usually have an option of which screen to show us.
Let's see if I can do it this way. If this doesn't work, I'll pass it back on. Sorry about the inconvenience. Technology always challenges me a little bit. Okay. All right. Hopefully now you can see the full screen. Is that the case, Adam?
You might see it all.
Okay. Well, good afternoon, commissioners. My name is Eunice Nouri, a coastal engineer with Moffat and Nicole, supporting the team here, Adam, and the Humboldt Harbor District. As Adam mentioned, today we're having a series of high-level updates. As you know, the project site is exposed to several natural hazards, including coastal flooding, shoreline erosion, seismic activity, and tsunamis. As we move forward with planning and design for landslide infrastructure, we need a clear understanding of these hazards to make sure that that what we build is safe and resilient and complies with local, state, and federal guidelines. My update today focuses on tsunamis. And then as I talked about the natural hazards, we know that sea level rise is there and it can exacerbate any of these hazards. The building code requires us for any landside improvement or infrastructure building to look at and analyze and design for a really rare but extreme tsunami event, something with about a 2475-year return period. So to do that, we've built a site-specific tsunami model to help us better understand what could happen during that kind of event. This model, if the animation shows for you guys, is showing the approach of the wave as it approaches the open coast and then the project site. So similar to the information that has been developed by various state agencies as well as Cal Poly Humboldt, what the model shows is pretty interesting. There could be a scenario that there's an initial drawdown where water actually pulls back from the shore, but then the first wave comes in and inundates the open coast, and then eventually reaching and flooding the project site. Some of the wave energy goes through the entrance between the jetties and then actually reaches the project site, resulting in kind of a follow-up inundation. And then there could be multiple tsunami waves that hit the project site with different amplitudes.
Yeah. Are you meaning to be showing us the animation right now? Because we're still seeing the first your first slide.
Oh.
I think it's slideshows, start show.
Interesting. So maybe. Yeah, let me see if I can. Okay, I think now you're looking at the right. Sorry about that. Okay, so I meant to show you. So do you guys see? All right, any chance you're seeing the animation now?
Yeah, it looks like it's starting now. Thanks.
Okay. All right, so here we're looking at the Humboldt Bay. If you can see my cursor, I'm pointing to roughly where the project site is as a point of reference. So you can see the jetties clearly and the entrance. So we're looking in the we're looking southward. So we're standing as a point of reference. This is the Tulawat Island, and then that's the project site. So we're looking south. And so you can see two waves that initially approach the open coast and inundate the project site. So here comes the first one, inundates the project site. Again, this is a very rare event, but extreme. And then the energy goes through the entrance and then travels upstream and then results in a kind of a second and follow-up inundation. this other animation shows it a little bit differently, so a little bit more zoomed in into the site. This line work here shows kind of one of the earlier concepts of site development. So we're looking at the site and kind of looking at similarly what would happen during the same event. So you can see that the first wave comes in and then floods the site. And then drains into the bay. And then the second wave comes through the entrance and then makes its way to the site. And then some areas get flooded. So kind of similar pattern. So what this model gives us is the ability to look at different scenarios. So basically we've built this site-specific tsunami model that allows us as a solid tool to understand the tsunami hazard for the site. And it's going to be really useful as we start testing different design options, like changes in site elevation or layout to see what works best for reducing tsunami risk. We are working on using these results to inform the design of the upland infrastructure. And I'm happy to answer any questions.
Any questions from the commission, Craig?
Sure, yeah, I've got a couple questions. Was that model, maybe I didn't hear you correctly, but was that model based on current elevations or on the design elevations? Is question one. Question two is, what size tsunami event were you modeling?
So the ones that I was showing, they are based on the proposed elevations, but we have existing and proposed, and we're looking at the changes. Did that answer your first part of your question?
The tsunami.
Yeah. And then the second part, the tsunami, it's a magnitude 9 based on the Richter scale. It's along the Cascadia subduction zone and what is defined as associated with the return period of roughly about 2,500 year return period event.
Can you correlate that with a wave height? I know that tsunamis are very different than wind waves, but is there a correlation in height?
And there's not a correlation with height. That correlation varies up and down the coast. What I can tell you is that the inundation along the open coast varies between 15 to close to 30 feet, depending on where you are, starting from the jetty and then getting going north. So it really varies spatially.
Any other questions from the commission? We have other presentations. So I think maybe I'll wait until we go through all our presentations to bring it out to the public. If that's okay.
Yeah.
I have a question real quick.
Okay.
Does that take into account subsidence during a Cascadia?
It does.
It does? Excellent.
It does, yes. It is expected that there would be subsidence. And obviously that exacerbates any potential flooding because then the land is actually lower after the seismic event. So yes, it does. Thank you. Good question.
So I saw, it's been a long time, 20 years or so, 30 years maybe, another similar, wasn't quite as nice as that, but there was anticipation that if there was a tsunami, it may come from the Mad River side and not over the top of the, because that's going to subside more than the mouth of the bay. Does that sound familiar?
That does sound familiar. Yeah. There are a couple of potential scenarios for how the tsunami could happen, depending on the rupture scenario along the Cascadia subduction zone. I was just showing one specific scenario that matches the building code prescription for how we need to do the analysis and design for any landside buildings. But you're right, there could be different scenarios and different conditions.
Great. Well, thank you very much. Move on to our next presenter.
You guys can hear me?
Yes.
Yes. Okay, let me share my screen. I hope it's smooth here. Let's see. All right.
She wants, we can just put it.
I'm sharing my seat. This one.
Gary, can you propagate Zoom on the screen for us?
Can you see my screen?
I'll do that.
Hey Gary, hey Siri, it's all the same.
The small box in the bottom right, AI on there.
There you go.
You can see my screen now.
Yeah,
now we do. Yes.
Yes. If I do this, it will be better, bigger now for you guys. No, it's not right. There's a display section, right? So this good?
You go to
There you go.
There it is. Perfect.
Okay, that's good. Okay. So the next several slides, I'm going to talk about web storage, for this project. I'm Xu Yingxing. I'm a coastal engineer as well to support, the work in the web storage area. So when I first heard the word web storage, I said, okay, that must be dry storage as well. But later on, I realized web storage just means it's a storage of the storage in water to temporarily hold this floating foundations or the floating turbines. So the web storage to the floating turbines is more like a temporary parking spot for the parts before they are sold, or a anchorage area for the vessels so they can drop the anchor and wait for the vessel call at the berth. So basically web storage is an area inside the water that are with a certain water depth, so they can hold the floating turbine or the foundation safely there, temporarily, before they can be towed out. So why we need web storage? To answer that question, we need roughly understand the process, how these foundation or the assembly be integrated and then towed out. So first, all the material will be ready on the land side. And then you see in the picture, these red, the showing yellow, these are the foundations. The foundation will be integrated first on the land side. And then this will be put on the barge, and the barge is gonna carry this foundation to a deep area we call this sinking basin. So basically the barge can be ballasted down and deep enough so this foundation can flow by themselves. So on a nice day, the weather is good, they can do the integration, can put the tower and blade on it. And also the berth is available, that means no other operations. They can tow this foundation to the berth directly, then do the integration there. But if it's not ready, then these foundation has to be put somewhere to temporarily, secure or moored before do the activity, the other activities. So that's called, web storage. We have to bring the foundation there and secure it. And then on the nice weather and when the berth is available, we can bring this foundation again to the berth, tow there. And then we do the integration to add the tower and the blade. And when at that time, if there's no big wave outside, the wind is mild and the opening of the bay, the bar area, it's good for navigate, and we have tugs available, generally need 3 tugs. So all these conditions are ready, and then we can tow this beautiful turbine outside and they can start to work for us. But any of the factors, if it's not ready, then this whole, integrated the foundation or turbine has to be put to the web storage as well. So they have to be safely secure there, during the wind event and stuff. So we have to find areas for the web storage. So we can go to the next page. Not working. Okay, it's good. So this one we're talking about the, so far, the potential web storage area, we have 2 places. One is on the south side, this side actually, it's along near the navigation channel. And the other one is more inner to the basin, adjacent to the turning basin. And we preliminary study showed that we need 5 to 10 spots to park or more of these floating turbines. That means it's a fully assembled, 5 to 10. We have to have the storage to be able to do that. And again, as I talked before, this web storage area is should be good for more of the fully assembled turbine and also the foundation itself. And next page. Yeah. And this one just talk about, there are different options, how we secure the foundation in the web storage area. So for like we can build a pier or dock, you know, fix the structure, just bring the foundation or the turbine there using the lines and the fenders, just like a ship. And we also can reduce the structure a little bit, just like the dolphins here shown, right? These are marine dolphins. These are the dolphins to have the fenders, and these are dolphins for the lines, like secure this tanker. We can use the same way to secure the turbine as well. And other options, like, you know, we can use a catenary system. Basically, we have a buoy and we have a chain connected and we have the anchor at the bottom to secure. If we only have one buoy or chain system, you know, the foundation may turn around depending on the wind direction. So more area needed. But if we have more mooring buoys, we can secure the foundation there, you know, just not move that much, right? So all kinds of options we are evaluating now. We're evaluating the options based on certain criteria as listed here. So we want 5 to 10 spots. So we want to see, okay, how many spots we can gain, right? And also some flexibility. We know the foundation could be different size and maybe different shape other than shown here as the yellow color. So we want to make sure we can, you know, deal with all kinds of foundations, right? And any environmental or cultural aspect, any concern related with that, we want to make sure we understand, we compare them. And operational wise, yes, you know, do you need a special vehicle or barge, or how long it takes to park there and take out? And for navigation, yes, we want to know whether any impact to the navigation, right? Not just the channel or turning basin, also the open area for the smaller ships, they probably can just go directly. And cost, of course, very important, you know, to get the west storage area ready, how much cost, and the operational-wise, any special vehicles, all these costs. So we're doing the evaluation now on all the options and following the criteria. So, and later probably we can report the results, but that's for today. Maybe you have a question now, or maybe we can hold the question later after the next presentation. Thank you.
Thank you.
The man who always has questions. I have so many questions. Thank you, Xu Yingxing, for that presentation. After seeing a very sobering tsunami modeling, I'm curious about the mooring. You know, I'm seeing, you know, dolphins and buoys and fixed pier options, but I'm wondering about in a tsunami, and we have 5 to 10 of these large turbines in the Samoa Channel. How secure are they? Are we going to have these stacked up against the Samoa Bridge? I mean, what's the worst case scenario, and how secure might they be against that kind of power of a tsunami?
Yeah. You know, when we really do the evaluation, we have to think about extreme conditions, right? Not just tsunami, also wind. Because, you know, only when severe weather occur, you cannot move this thing out, right? So we have to design the anchoring system or the structure to be strong enough to hold the wind and certain tsunami, right? We cannot say, okay, you know, the whole island is gone, or so bad condition, we still can't be able to hold everything. So that's certain criteria where we're looking at it, and we're going to consider in our, you know, preliminary evaluation or calculation.
Okay.
So we're still evaluating all these, you know, conditions and criteria.
That will be a question in the community. So please continue to evaluate.
Any other questions from the board? Do we have another presentation?
Yes.
Structural.
There it is.
Hi, everyone. I'm Maryam Abusober. I'm a structural engineer with Moffitt and Nicole. I'm happy to be here to give you a quick presentation and explain where we are with the structure. I'm going to attempt sharing my screen. Hopefully it's going to work smoothly. Are you guys seeing the presentation?
No.
It's coming. Coming up.
Coming up.
That's quite
okay.
Oh my goodness.
Okay. Sure. Hopefully you're seeing it now.
Yes.
Okay, great. So I'm kind of going to divide my presentation to two parts. First, I'm going to explain a little bit what the function of a heavy lift wharf is. And that is important because it's going to govern or dictate the size of the wharf, the geometry of the wharf, and also the loads that the wharf is needs to be designed for. At the second part, I'm going to touch on the structural design criteria of the wharf and hopefully just very briefly touch on the next steps in our design. So what is the function of the wharf? Why do we need a heavy lift platform to begin with? There are three different main functions for a heavy lift platform wharf in an offshore wind terminal or a floating offshore wind terminal. First is the delivery of the offshore wind turbine component. As you all know, the wind turbine components are large, they're heavy, they're lined. So it's often not practical to transfer them to the site using like land transport. So they usually are transferred to the site using custom built large vessels, which we call delivery vessels. Delivery vessels will berth against the wharf, they are moored securely to the wharf, and then these components are transferred to the wharf, often using crawler cranes. And then from there, they're gonna be transported to their designated areas on the upland. So during this activity, we need to design the wharf for the mooring and berthing load of the vessel, the weight under the crane, and also the weight under the components, which are at the wharf briefly. This is the same for fixed bottom or the floating offshore wind components. Sorry, there are some, I see some feedback on the line. Okay. So the next function of the wharf, which is specific to the floating offshore wind terminals, are related to the floating foundation. So the floating foundation elements can be fabricated on the wharf, and then should be in that case they need to be transferred to the water. This activity can be done using semi-submersible barges. In that case, the semi-submersible barge needs to berth against the wharf securely, moored to the wharf, so these expensive assets could be safely transferred to this semi-submersible barge and then submerge and come back to the wharf. For this activity, the wharf needs to be designed for the mooring and berthing load of the barge and also mooring and berthing load of the foundation itself. And also the weight of the foundation element itself, which will be applied to the surface of the wharf. The third function of the wharf is the assembly. Yeah, and this function will put the largest design load on the wharf. So these large components needs to be assembled on top of the floating foundation, which is moored against the wharf. Opposite to the fixed bottom, right now with the technology that we have, we cannot do this in the wind farm. This whole activity has to happen at the wharf itself. So what's going to happen is that the wharf needs to be able to withstand the pressure under the ring crane and also the mooring and berthing load of the foundation before and after the assembly. So with that, I'm going to kind of move to the design part. So this criteria will establish the geometry of the wharf. To accommodate all these functions, which sometimes they need to happen at the same time, we are envisioning two separate wharves 17 to 800 feet long and 150 feet wide, and to be able to support the vessels, foundation, and submersible barge, we need a berth pocket with an elevation of minus 40 NABD. Again, to support these activities, we're going to need to design the valve for 6,000 PSF live load, which is a large load compared to any other type of terminal, say, the container terminals, and is a significant, it has a significant impact on the design. The dead load is obviously the load of the loads which are permanently on the structure, the weight of the structure itself, the pavement, which in offshore wind terminals, there are usually dense grated aggregates, the mooring and berthing loads of all those delivery vessels, foundation, barges, and the assembled foundation. And last but not least, the seismic loading criteria, which will be done based on requirement of ASC 61, which is a manual by the American Society of Civil Engineers specific to the seismic design of the wharf and piers. So the manual has different levels of earthquake. For each level, it has requirement for a certain behavior that is accepted from the wharf, and then has the required criteria for each element that those elements need to satisfy, so the wharf structure in whole wharf structure can satisfy the required behavior. So based on all this, we're going to determine what the demand on the structure is. To be able to support this demand, similar to all other offshore wind wharf, we're going to need deep foundation. In our case, these foundations are piles. And they are by far the most important element of the wharf structure and the most expensive element of the structure. To calculate the capacity of the wharf, we're going to look at three different aspects. The structural capacity, which depends on the type of material that they're using for the pile. It depends on the size of the pile, obviously, and also the height of the pile above the mudline and below the mudline. So with all this information, we can calculate the capacity of the pile. The geotechnical capacity of the pile, which is given to us by the geotechnical engineer and depends on the soil characteristic on the site, and also the consideration of drivability, if the pile can withstand all those stresses that occurs during the drive. So using this demand, using this capacity, right now we're envisioning using steel pipe piles, open-ended steel pipe piles, and they're placed 12 to 13 feet on center, and they'll be supporting a concrete deck, which is thickened at the face of the wharf to be able to support all those mooring and berthing activities. For the next step, we're going to be doing a more geotechnical investigation so we can get a better understanding of the pile geotechnical capacity of the pile. And then we're going to use those information and we're going to advance our structural modeling to get a better behavior, understanding of the behavior of the wharf, both for the vertical load and more importantly for the lateral load. With that, I'm going to end my presentation here. I'm happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Here again.
I'll let someone else go first. If
anybody else have,
I don't have any questions.
Any questions? Great.
Okay, Mariam Abusaur, thank you for that that wonderful presentation. I know you're doing really good work. So you mentioned about ships coming in to bring all the components really to reassemble these turbines. So the nacelles and the tower elements and the blades themselves. So large ships are going to come and deliver these on the wharf side. And so my question is, how long are they going to be there? And in order to reduce greenhouse gases, one of our goals is to be a zero emission or work towards being a zero emission facility. Is there going to be any way to plug in those ships to electric or in all the time that they're there, are they going to still have to keep their systems going by keeping their engines running?
So this is a little bit beyond the structural kind of aspect of the design. I know that there is consideration for ship to power, shore to power, shore to ship power, and I think Adam is a better kind of resource to answer this question.
Thank you.
They will. They'll be cold ironing for the large ships and will ship to shore power for small
power. Okay, great. Thank you.
What did I say? Yeah, cold iron. Yeah, that's what it's
called. Means shore power.
Shore power. Well, it's a, yeah, shore power.
Can I grab that? Sorry. Do we have anything else?
Keywords tonight.
Any other presentations or speakers on this?
We do not.
Items? Okay. Any other general questions on this report from the commission? Anyone from the public care to comment or ask questions on the status update that we received? Well, thank you so much to the speakers for that really detailed information. Very much appreciate it. There's no other discussion or questions. I'll move on to the next item. Take just a brief break. Or do you mind if we just go ahead and start this item?
Right, okay.
All right. So moving on to item number 11, authorize the submission of a letter in support of proposed Assembly Bill AB 472, authored by Assemblymember Chris Rogers, related to vital port infrastructure state investment.
I'll make a motion to support the second letter.
All right. So we have a motion and a second. Is there a staff report on this item?
Sure. So the district's actively working to permit and plan a heavy lift marine terminal, as we've been hearing tonight, and we certainly are well aware from our meetings. One of the unique things that's happening right now is that we have a great deal of support from the state of California. So we're looking to update an obsolete marine infrastructure where we're looking to go ahead and create economic rural development, job creation. We know that it's very likely that wind is going to be our first customer at this terminal site. That's the amount of design and engineering we're putting into it. Assemblyman Chris Rogers has co-authored a bill, AB 472. It's about 25% through the way right now. And what this does is it provides for the governor to put in his budget a plan 5 years in advance to support port infrastructure that will support offshore wind. And so we'd like to submit a letter of support. We were a little derelict on this because we didn't get the sign-on letter in time, but as you can see, Offshore Wind California, Environment California, Port of Long Beach, American Clean Power Association, our Association of Port Authorities, to which we belong, and others have signed a coalition letter of support. So we'd like to submit our own letter of support in recognition of AB 472, and then we'll also, as this coalition letter is updated, we would join the coalition letter as well. We're at a really vital time trying to figure out how to fund this infrastructure. There's an incredible amount of marine infrastructure that has to be put into service, referencing again what we're learning tonight, the amount of discovery, engineering, design, and ultimately construction that are going to go into these is extreme. So we do need the investment from the state. We feel that investment from the state will spur private investment. So it is our recommendation that you authorize the submission of a letter, and then on the heels of that, we would join the greater coalition letter when it's updated soon.
Great. Thank you. Seems like a reasonable idea. Any further discussion from the commissioners on this?
Do they need a motion or just a blessing?
I think we have we have a motion in a second.
Oh, I missed that. Sorry.
Any discussion from the public on signing on to, or I guess submitting a letter and signing on the letter. So that is our letter drafted, or they'll be drafted, and we'll collaborate on that.
That's correct. Assume. I will work directly with board president to submit that letter.
All righty then. So we have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed or abstain? Hearing none, passes unanimously. Thank you very much.
leaving it in squirrel mode.
What's our timeline on trying to get that in?
Tomorrow. No, we have a thing. I'd like to send a letter
just
out.
Just a blank middle, piece of paper
middle
now.
Of next week. I have it well prepared to share with you. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. All right, moving on to item B, consider authorizing the executive director to negotiate and execute a grant agreement with the California Energy Commission for the Humboldt Bay Heavy Lift Marine Terminal Advanced Design and Public Engagement Project.
Well, I have a quick staff report for you. And so this is part of the Waterfront Facility Improvement Program. The district submitted an application back in December for this grant and was notified and was a lot of these, some of these slides are reused from last month, but just to give you a reminder, it was a $45 million total budget for this program, and the district applied for just under $2 million and was awarded $18,250,000 of that. And so this agenda item is to authorize the executive director to negotiate with the California Energy Commission to finalize the scope for the project and sign the grant agreement. These were the other awardees that got some money from this grant as well, this grant program, Long Beach, Oakland, Richmond, and San Luis. And then what this grant will cover is enhanced community engagement and additional design and enhanced engineering studies. So there includes stipends for tribal stakeholder and community participation, additional community engagement strategies, workforce development, and then additional kind of engagement materials. It is funding some green terminal related strategies and standards for green terminal emissions and green terminal standards and emissions reduction strategies. And let's see, it's not convincing. Oh, thank you. And then some additional requested supplemental studies too, additional visual simulations, additional noise studies, some additional marine biology analyses and studies related to marine mammal and bird monitoring, some enhanced engineering, additional geotech and sediment studies, refined cost estimates, and then a mitigation site planning as well. So the staff recommendation is to authorize the executive director to negotiate the contract.
I move to authorize the executive director to negotiate and execute a grant agreement with CEC.
I'll second. I'll list the objective.
And we have the motion, and I don't know who got the second first.
I wrote JN, sorry.
Okay. any further discussion from the commissioners?
Yay. Yeah. I mean, this is really, really good news. Thank you so much to staff. And I just don't see why we would authorize you to apply for a grant, make you go through all of that work, and then say no to negotiating the money once it's awarded. So I don't see a whole lot to talk about among the commissioners, for myself at least.
Yeah, no, it's part of the authorization that I guess we have to authorize you to submit it. Then we authorize accepting it and authorizing signing a contract. But any discussion or comments from the community? Hearing none, I'll bring it back up for a vote. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed or abstaining? Again, hearing none, passes unanimously.
Thank you.
Moving right on through everything, selection of a professional consultant. And
yeah, I mean, you don't get to leave.
An award for a professional services contract for the EPA Brownfields Community-Wide Assessment Grant, EPA Region 9, award number BF98T67701.
Sure, so you'll recall we got a nice little award from the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency for a community-wide assessment grant. This affects certain parcels in the Samoa Peninsula. We were awarded the maximum grant of $500,000. It's going to allow us to conduct new phase one studies that will help us to inform the path forward. There is a community component on this. Currently, Jen Colt, who I apparently has left, but anyway, Jen is participating in that as well as a few others. We're really happy to have this. I've worked with Vanessa on this grant back in, can you believe it, Vanessa, November of 22, I think it was, over the Thanksgiving holiday. But due to her prior good work and the additions that her and I were able to make, we achieved this grant. This does include land that we do not own. So we're working with property owners on the Samoa Peninsula who will be participating in this with us. So it's taken a bit of time to get here. There will continue to be activities where we need to organize and have land use permits with those property owners. But Ryan and I have worked through the bulk of that, and there's cooperation as we move forward. So again, I want to point out that this is a $500,000 grant. We went ahead and issued an RFQ to secure technical services. We received three very qualified proposals, so this wasn't necessarily the choice we made. But after we reviewed each proposal, we conducted interviews that their teams came on and presented to our team. We then spoke with our district engineer at great length. Keep in mind, our district engineer could not bid on this. We had them support us in their engineer role and lead up this RFQ process for us. So the conclusion of this is that staff and the district engineer are recommending that the district proceed with Terra Phase for the required assessment services. And so again, reminder, received a grant, 2025, we're saying let us get to work. Just for reference, these are the parcels. These parcels, incidentally, have a footprint very similar or identical to the heavy lift marine terminal. These activities were commenced separate of the heavy lift marine terminal, but I want to recognize as complements work that is critical for us continuing to move our project forward and build that Humboldt heavy lift marine terminal. So again, Terra Phase with the selected consultants are asking you tonight to confirm the recommendation selection and authorize the executive director to negotiate scope of work and ultimately a contract.
Okay. Any discussions or questions?
I'm going to move if nobody else is going to move this. Staff recommends to the board confirm Terra Phase as the district's consultant in response to the qualifications for the terminal.
Second. We have a motion in a second. I just have one quick. Have we worked with Terra Phase before? The name is familiar, I thought.
Yeah, Terra Phase, just to speak a little bit about them, they unanimously appeared to us as the people that were right to work on this. They've worked on a number of sites around Humboldt Bay in particular. They have a very dominant position in cleaning up former lumber mill sites. The bulk of their work has been in our region, all the way up into Oregon and then Washington State. They have a partner group they use. I don't remember if it's CWH or CHW, probably in my notes here.
Didn't they do RMT2?
Or CHA, I think it is. They did not do RMT2, but they have done smaller projects around the peninsula. They most notably did the Simpson site over where BMD is located here in Eureka, which is one of the more aggressive sites in the region. Incidentally, Green Diamond owns some of the parcels that are part of this, and they were very favorable that we would consider Terra Phase.
Great. Thank you. Nothing else from the board? Anything from the public? Thumbs up? I'll take it. Okay, great. Thank you. Then bringing it back up, we have a motion and a second. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed or abstaining? Hearing none. So thank you. Passes unanimously. Moving on.
We'll make one announcement before we move on. My students, just that they can leave.
No, they can't leave. They don't get credit if they leave.
Okay. You've heard from the commission.
No, go.
My students, you've earned your extra credit. You don't have to stay for the budget pieces.
One of the most interesting parts of public service.
Garrett, there's a large investment in the dock here.
I don't want to grade students.
Yeah. All right, well, thank you.
So whenever we hear the budget, I want to make a point to you all that typically the public walks out, just for what it's worth.
Well, that's actually a really good sign, because typically the public would come here when we're discussing budget
they used
to tell us we were doing it wrong.
You so think
that it's
nope, then we balance our budget.
No, that used to happen quite frequently. We'd have the public telling us we were doing everything wrong with our budget, and that hasn't happened in a while, so I'm taking that as a good sign.
I still, you know, you haven't had the
budget. Yeah, that's true yet. So we'll move on to consideration of initial fiscal year 2025-2026 budget step preparation. Step one, preliminary goals for Woodley Island Marina, Fields Landing Boatyard, and related dredging.
Okay, so I'm going to go back to presentation mode here. Now I regret that I did. I got to go through one slide. Sorry about that. Hang tight. I want to give a shout out to everybody tonight, both Gary and those that log in remotely. It is always a challenge when there's a technical difficulty, but everybody worked through it well. They were real troopers, and I have to say I really appreciate that. I'm sorry that you got to see me advance through these slides real quick, but this is how it's going to be. Huh. All right, so we got money, the change of pace from the past. Starting with Woodley Island Marina, so just a point in our operation, we bring the income portion back when we bring the draft budget in, right? So I just want to make sure that you recognize as we go through these slides, we're talking really about the preliminary expenses that the staff's considering. These are incorporated into the budget after tonight. You've been hearing me hint around meeting with the budget subcommittee. This is the last step before we, or excuse me, advisory committee, before we meet the budget advisory committee, at least on this first step one of the process. So dredging, right now we're estimating no money for dredging because we're still waiting for our FEMA reimbursement grant, or perhaps it might expand upon that. You'll remember that after the winter storms of 22, we applied for money from FEMA to dredge. That didn't advance at the rate that anyone would have hoped. So we borrowed money to dredge. We have dredged our marina. We still have a little bit of work between D&E, and we've got work that we need to do between G&H and H&I. So right now, I put it in the budget in case FEMA money comes soon, but if it doesn't, that is, unfortunately, that will be the process for this year. It is important to note we have dredged the last 2 years and dredged quite successfully and opened up a great deal of the marina. Most of the people that were relocated due to draft restrictions or not being able to get in their slips are in their slips now. So feel very positive about that. We're estimating $30,000 for dock improvements. These include things such as whalers, rub boards, cleats, electrical, water, other plumbing. We have sewer and some bilge system. So that is generally a categorical $30,000 there. Embarcadero parking and a lot repairs. We need to do some more grinding and patching on the Embarcadero, as well as our parking lot. Appreciate the support we got when we commenced this last year. We were able to take able to accomplish quite a considerable amount around the area. Interior painting, we're in a 1981 building, folks. And well, we've gotten portions of it painted. We still got a little bit to go. We're due to paint the Army Corps of Engineers this year and then finish off here in our office. We have deferred, I joined the district in 2019. For 6 years, we've deferred this roof repair. So this year, we're going to get the roof put on over the Cafe Marina, our restrooms, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. It's going to happen. And then security cameras, we were able to replace the cameras on our docks at the heads of our docks, but we need to get the remainder of our property put together. This also includes an access control system, which allows our restrooms, our shower facilities, and ultimately an entrance gate that would close at night to be under control. Some other things are marina lighting. We've been working with RCEA, Redwood Coast Energy Authority, to perhaps look at some sort of a grant program or on-bill financing program to upgrade our lighting. RCEA has been great. The programs have not been favorable, so we're going to put some investment into these lights to at least to be fully LED. We believe we could come in under budget on that one, but I want to make sure that we put the full amount in there, and just so we do accomplish the project and don't defer it to another time. Any budget that's left over, if we can actually expend it, we would move to the lighting on the floats.
Restroom refresh. This is a third year we've been putting this in our budget so we can get our west and east bathrooms done. A little bit left to do on the east bathrooms. This investment will go in the men's restroom here on Woodley Island. We'll have to carry the women's next year. That is not a disrespectful thing, men over women. That is simply where the greatest need is because we have a significant failure in one of the skylights in the men's restroom. Entrance and canopy walkway. This is another deferral. If you walk in here, you'll notice that a great deal of our canopy is shored up. It is more than we can manage. We've done a lot of work trying to keep that thing in place, but it needs to come down. We will not be replacing it. We'll be working with the tenants and within our coastal development permit for the facility to put up some sort of a new canopy that takes a little less maintenance and perhaps a little bit more modern too. So more to come on that. Finally, our landscape, about $3,750. This is for a native plant project and a tree project that began, I think, when Commissioner Benson was elected. And it's just one of those things that's been deferred because we haven't been able to get to it. So about $166,000 invested in Woodley Island. Very excited about that. But with anything that comes deferrals, right? So we got to pinch the piggy bank. I'm going to move that. There we go. So we need some traffic calming here. We've put in some speed bumps, but we still have some little speed demons that come through the islands. So we're going to do some additional traffic calming devices at some point in time. A great amount of parking lot striping. You'll notice there's a lot more on the entranceway and canopy. That's because there's a lot more canopies around here. We have them on our east and west bathrooms. Mm-hmm. We have them on the backside. So we're going to take care of what we can take care of this year, which is the greatest portion of and to prevent failure. But there is a deferral there. And then, of course, dredging, as we talked. So we're going to pinch the piggy a little bit. But we've got about $3 million in deferrals. I want to point out, the good news is we're down to $29,500 in deferrals when we exempt dredging. 2019, we were over $200,000 in deferrals. Mm-hmm. So a lot of progress is made. I want to recognize, that we have done that. Staff has worked diligently to self-perform things to bring it in for much lower costs than if we would have hired it outside. So,
Chris, hate to add other things to your list, but the other day, someone was asking me about bike parking and additional bike parking on our bike racks, which shouldn't be a high expense item. But
yeah, so we do have, unfortunately, a limited amount of bike racks right here. Yeah. We definitely could. We have to figure out where to do bikes, but we definitely could consider that. I'm thinking since we have the Boy Scout project coming up, it's possible that we could put something over in that area, which would be close to the restaurant, close to, right on the Embarcadero, and pretty centrally located. Yeah, thank you. Yeah. That's a good suggestion. And that seems achievable.
Yeah.
Okay, so then let's move to Fields Landing. Wash water operations, BMPs. This is in addition to the major projects that we're working on down there, but this is specifically the things such as better upgrading the sanders so they can have the vacuum directly on them. This is putting source control in place. This is putting a different level of wattles. This is putting much higher levels of metal collection in the DIs. We have a pretty good inventory of these things on site right now, but we need to continue to reinvest and expand those. So $7,500. Stormwater pretreatment, this a project that we started back when I came on the board. The first staff report I brought to you as the executive director, came in as the executive director, was to get Fields Landing Boatyard solved once and for all. Mike and I have worked very closely with his team on this past year. I think we've expended about $50,000 in design and research and whatnot. But this is where we're at right now. As you know, we brought you a fully permitted project. The costs are coming in a little bit higher than we thought they are. We are doing some sampling down there to see if we might, again, be able to self-perform. We do have a construction superintendent on our payroll, as well as an operator. And so it's very possible we could do portions of this, but we don't quite know that yet. The travel lift, we deferred straps last year. We need to spend $25,000 on travel lift straps. If we don't have straps, we can't haul boats. If we can't haul boats, we won't have a tenant. Building and painting, $3,500. And then general repairs and maintenance down in that facility. These are the things that are not the tenant's responsibility, that are the district's responsibility. and $1,000 to continue to maintain and keep our south pad grubbed. So $264,500, if you take the $225 out of there again, I think when if we look back in successive budget years, we had so much deferred maintenance. And so I want to once again recognize and point out that we are, but there's that little belt cincher again. We need to seal the tarmac. We had proposed last year we'd start on a phase one project for $10,000. Well, we're deferring it again this year, unfortunately. The remainder of the site painting, we won't be able to do this year. Our travel lift needs tires, but it needs straps more because we can repair tires. We can't prepare straps, and we have no money to dredge at Fields Landing. And even if we got the FEMA money for here, it's not allocated for Fields Landing. So that's something that we're going to have to work on and see what we can do. So about $48,000 in deferrals down there. But overall, you know, things are improving. I think we're going to bring a very tight budget in again this year as we did last year. It'll be very honest. But more to come. We've got three more of these budget meetings and then, of course, bringing you the final budget for adoption.
Great. Thank you.
It's an information item, but I'm happy to answer questions or take comments.
Sure. Director Mickelson, last year, when we were doing this budget process, we decided it was time to take care of Fields Landing. We used words like once and for all in terms of the stormwater treatment piece of it. And so is some of that 225 carried
forward? That's what that is.
From what we approved last year?
Yeah, we've moved as far as we can move last year. The hope was we started with the design and we wanted to do the construction, but I think initial estimates were about 150,000.
Yeah.
I don't know, Mike, if you recall offhand, considerably higher than that.
Okay.
So unfortunately, we had to move it into a new year. It is likely, if we find that we don't have real shallow groundwater there, that we could commence some of this in this year's budget cycle. And there are funds set aside to do that. If not, we may use those funds to do something such as the straps or the travel lift tires. We'll just have to look at that. We also have to work in tandem with our tenant. Our tenant has responsibility for certain maintenance obligations down there. So we need to make sure that he's prepared to invest his portion of the monies as well.
I'll save any of my other questions for when Jack and I and staff get together to as a budget subcommittee to kind of go through.
And feel free to reach out anytime as well.
Yeah. Okay.
Any other questions from the commissioners or from the public? All right. Well, thank you very much for that.
Absolutely.
We're moving on to our final item, the district draft audit received for fiscal year ending June 30th, 2024.
So again, this is just a simple for information only. Want to let you know that we received the draft audit. This is our consultant for many years now, Harshwell and Company. Overall, the draft audit looks very, very good, but of course it needs to be reviewed by myself and our district treasurer. Lindsay's not here tonight. She's very busy with tax season. It's overall, it's a good compliment to Mindy's work and the controls are in place. We don't have any deficiencies whatsoever in the audit, but it's just received. So we need time to review it. We'll bring it back to the board for adoption in May.
Great. All right. Well, thank you for that. With that, I think we are adjourned.
Good job.
Yeah.
You weren't limping earlier.
Oh, no, yeah.
All right.
Yeah, I got the same sort of chair at work.
I don't know what to talk to Ken Gates about.